We've heard this controversy around ICBC. Not only are they telling you, or they finally agreed to tell at least the BC Utilities Commission and us what the rates are going to be in the upcoming years. We heard government try and block this for a period of time, and of course they didn't have any success. But we're looking at a 4.9% increase in our basic premiums this year. We're also looking at overall a 42% compounded rate hike to 2020. Very concerning. And then we have the minister, Stone, out there at this news conference, throws this noise or wants you to focus your attention away from your 42% rate hike coming up from ICBC and saying, you know what, we're looking after you because we are no longer going to insure vehicles that are $150,000 or more. Like, that's going to make a big difference. He talked about someone having their light, the turnaround, the light fixed for $38,000. So they want you to go out there and they want you to believe these people. And remember, we have over 3 million vehicles insured here in the province of BC, that these people, and I think there's only around 3,000, are really going to make a difference because we're not insuring them. We're going to have the private insurance companies insuring them. But to talk a little bit more about this and get his opinion, I'm joined by an expert in this area, Manjot Helen, lawyer specialized in automobile accident claims, personal injury, and he's a partner at Warnett Helen LLP. Good morning, Manjot.
Hey, good morning, Cash. Thanks for having me on the show.
Well, I kind of went on a rant this morning with Neil Morrison about this, and I wanted to get you on. I woke up thinking about this because I'm listening to Stone on the radio live, and I'm going, what is he doing? A bunch of noise created because he wants to deflect this away from the issue of rate hikes.
Well, Cash, first thing I can say is they're doing something. I mean, $2.3 million in savings is, it's a step.
It's a drop in the bucket, though.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, there's a lot more that they can be doing to improve things. One of the things that you and I spoke about the last time I was on this show is let's focus on the real issues, like distracted driving. You get rid of people talking on their phones or texting while they're driving, and you're going to save a lot more than $2.3 million. But in theory, this idea that they have, it makes sense in theory. Look, luxury vehicles, if you can afford a vehicle for more than $150,000, then you shouldn't require a public insurer to insure that vehicle and in theory be subsidized by other rate payers here in British Columbia. So the logic behind it makes a little bit of sense, but you're correct. It's only $2.3 million savings, and you need to save a lot more to bring the rates down. And like I said, one of the ways to do that is to end distracted driving and improve the inefficiencies over at ICBC, discussions that you and I have had in the past.
But we are going to have that 42% rate hike, no matter what mitigation they put in on luxury vehicles right now. And the question I have on this, are we talking about basic insurance for those luxury vehicles, or are we talking about the optional insurance? Because this is very different. If they're opening up the basic insurance, they're actually opening up a can of worms for other private companies to come in and give you basic insurance.
Yeah, I got to tell you, Cash, I don't totally understand how they're going to save this $2.3 million because it doesn't make a lot of sense to me. So let's use an example for your listeners here. Let's say I'm driving at the corner of Robson and Granville where my office is, and you know, I'm not driving a Ferrari or a Lamborghini. Trust me, I'd love to, but I'm not. And I'm stopped at a red light. I get hit from behind. If I get hit from behind and there's damage to my vehicle and I suffer injuries, let's say my claim is worth $10. Now, it doesn't matter if I'm hit by a Tercel or by a Ferrari. I'm still entitled to $10 from the basic insurance of the vehicle that hit me. So I don't see how that getting out of the business of luxury, insuring luxury cars, presents any savings in that type of scenario. Now, the only way there could be a savings, and again, I don't quite understand this either, because where they're getting the $2.3 million from, and of course, they haven't presented us the numbers, but say, for example, I do have a Ferrari or a Lamborghini. I'm one of the fortunate people in British Columbia to be driving a vehicle like that. And I take it out for a spin, and I wrap it around a pole. Now, ICBC has to cover the repairs for my vehicle under my own collision policy. But in theory, the premiums that I pay for that collision policy should be a lot higher than the premiums paid by someone who's driving a Civic.
Yes.
So But what's happened here, and what I assume has happened here, is one of two things. Either the premiums have not caught up with the repair costs, so these people that have been driving the Lamborghinis and Ferraris haven't been paying the type of premiums they should have been paying all along, and that's where the savings comes in. Or number two, the assumption is that people that drive these vehicles are more likely to be at fault for accidents. They're more likely to be speeding. They're more likely to be doing something stupid that causes accidents. But that's where it doesn't make a lot of sense to me, the numbers and how they came up with this $2.3 million savings. But if we believe that it's a $2.3 million savings, then it's obviously, it's something. It is a savings, and they're taking some measures at least.
Well, the $2.3 million savings, I'm making an assumption. Now, I haven't seen the actual facts on this either. Is it's around repair costs.
That makes sense.
That's what I'm thinking is taking place here. But, you know, again, are they saying to these people that have the luxury vehicles, and I think in the interim till legislation's passed, when they sit again, they're going to be paying double the rate of what they're paying right now. But at the end of the day, you know, you have to look at, is it going to make a difference? And is it just apply through the optional insurance? Because many of the people that already have these luxury vehicles have an optional insurance. I don't buy my optional insurance from ICBC. I buy it from a private company. And we know, Manjot, these private companies have wanted to come into this to take the monopoly away from the basic side.
And, you know, and certainly ICBC is opening that up now, aren't they? Because now if they're getting out of the business of insuring these luxury vehicles altogether, then private insurers are going to have to insure and provide basic coverage for these luxury vehicles.
Unless they try and have their cake and eat it too, because, you know, they have wanted not to have that opened up for other people. They want to maintain that monopoly. And you know, we are creatures of convenience. If we can go there, if we have to go to get our basic, we'll most likely get our optional side there too.
That's right. Now, what we need to focus on, though, Cash, is you spoke about the rate increases and how it's a concern for all citizens of British Columbia. But how do we prevent that? How does ICBC save money? That's a question we need to be asking ourselves. And I come back to the same couple of topics here. One is distracted driving. It is a massive expense. If we can make distracted driving have the same stigma as impaired driving,
yes,
then I can assure you we're going to save a lot of money on claims, a ton. And that's one step that ICBC should be taking. They should have a better campaign around distracted driving. Lawyers such as myself and a lot of my colleagues, we're running campaigns like that. We appreciate it as a problem. I have colleagues of mine that are speaking at high schools. My firm sponsors Drop It and Drive Canada. And these are the types of initiatives that we need to take to ensure that insurance premiums don't spiral out of control. And the other big issue is the inefficiencies of ICBC. You know, yes, a topic that you and I have discussed,
yes,
at length.
And that's concerning, because I'm not sure what ICBC is actually doing. They're not really allowed to operate as strictly just a crown corporation and not having the political interference. We've seen that political interference. I've witnessed it firsthand, where their government is actually taking money out of the corporation and putting it into their general revenue to make government look more appealing than others. They call it a dividend of something of that nature. Well, they've drained the company so much that they can't take a dividend out anymore. But at the same time, they cannot mitigate the increase of 42% till 2020 simply because they don't have this money built in. You would think as a corporation, they'd operate as a corporation and mitigate the raise in premiums because of the money they have. But that's not taking place.
Absolutely. And you make a good point. If they're a corporation in name, they should act like a corporation in theory. And we don't see a lot of that. You should see some of the things I see over here, Cash.
Well,
as I discussed with you previously, it's nuts.
It's incredible. Even this is what I'm saying, is they're not acting responsibly, Manjo, because even when they have people that have suffered as a result of a motor vehicle accident, they put them through the rigmarole for, you know, something that they need compensation for. And they do that based on some simple policy, not based on whether they will have legal success or success in this area or not.
Exactly. I mean, if everyone knows that this claim is worth $10, why end up paying $10 and $5 in legal fees? That's what ICBC ends up doing. They end up paying $15 when they could have settled that claim for $10. That's the issue. That's where the inefficiencies come in. I mean, obviously, I'm using an example with $10. It's the claims are usually more than that, but that just in a nutshell, why pay all this money to defend a claim and end up settling it for the exact same amount that you could have settled for prior to trial?
At great expense. Great expense to the taxpayer.
Exactly.
To the people that, and it's the taxpayers. It's the 3 million vehicles that are insured here. They're the taxpayers having to pay this this increase. So 42% increase. I've got to ask you, Manjot, do you think that the key to this, and we talked about distracted driving, impaired driving, all of that, is prevention, taking preventative approaches like Manjot Hallan is doing, or Warnet Hallan is doing in the schools right now, in sponsoring the Drop It program? Or do you think it's going to be deterrence or a bit of both? You know, that punishment,
it's gotta
fine,
be a bit of both.
The large fine.
It's got to be a bit of both, Cash. I mean, look, we can only do so much in educating the youth in particular to stop using their devices when driving. The other side of it has got to be heavier fines. Now, the government's taken steps in the right direction. They have increased the fines recently, but we need to see more. We need to see more done in that regard. And as a culture as well, we've got to think differently about distracted driving. As I said to you in the past, when you're out and about, you're at a bar with your friends, every one of your friends is going to ask you before you drive, are you okay to drive? I saw that you had a beer or a beer and a half, or whatever the case may be. Most of your friends are going to ask you that question. You're sitting on your phone all night, fighting with your wife or your spouse. Nobody cares to ask you at the end of the night, you going to be okay to drive? I saw you on your phone all night long. I want to make sure that you're not going to be using your phone while you're driving. People don't have those discussions. And we need to change our mindset as a community around this issue. We need to attach the same stigma to distracted driving that we attach to impaired driving. That's the only way to end it.
And that starts with our youth.
It does.
So I applaud Warnet Hallan for sponsoring that program in our school system, because we need to get more of that information out to our youth, because in the long run, we are going to benefit from this. But in the short term, I got to tell you, Manjot, this 42% rate hike for the next few years, we're going to have to pay it. It's a compounded rate hike. I believe we're going to have to pay it. I believe ICBC is going to try and, or government is going to try and create noise around this increase in a way that you'll say, okay, these people that are driving these Ferraris, the only, you know, BMWs, whatever, are the ones that are driving up your rate. But you point out a very good thing. There's other areas that government really needs to focus on. Let's take that $2.3 million, if we can understand it a little bit better, and say, okay, we've got one point here, but there's much more reward or a benefit that we can obtain with these other initiatives.
That's right. Absolutely.
Manjot, thanks for taking time out of your day. I know I sprung this on you suddenly this morning, and it's great to get your perspective on this and other areas around automobile accident, personal injury claims, and other areas. I'm going to hit you up. I'm going to talk to Amrit right now. I want to get you back on because I want to talk to you about this youth problem that we're having, to get your perspective on this.
Great. Thanks, Cash.
Have a great day, Manjot.
You too.